This week's parsha is Parshas Tetzave. This week's parsha is Parshas Tetzave, and we will start on page 470, middle of the parsha. So I just want to mention before I begin that what I'll be saying today actually comes, I'll say it comes out of a sefer called Yisodei HaTorah. It is a sefer that was compiled, I guess would be the right word, by Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky, the Rosh Yeshiva in Silver Spring, Washington. And he put together a sefer called Yisodei HaTorah, in which he gathers together the fundamental principles of the Torah mentioned in the writings of the Rishonim and the Achrayim, and it's all basically arranged according to the Parsha. So what it is that he actually brings, you know, the exact wording, you know, from the commentaries, and on the side he writes little notes about what the principle that comes out of what they write. So a number of the things that I have prepared for tonight comes from that sefer. But it's basically, you know, like I say, he gathers together the writings of the Rishonim and the Achrayim, quoting them verbatim, again arranged according to the Parsha, and focusing on the fundamental principles of the Torah. So we're going to begin on page 470, which is Perek Chav Ches Pasuk Lamed. V'nasata el Choshen HaMishpat, and you shall put into the Choshen HaMishpat. The Choshen HaMishpat was the breastplate worn by the Kohen Gadol. You will put inside as the Urim v'Satumim. The Choshen was folded over, and in the folds, HaMoshe was told to place the Urim and the Tumim. The Urim and the Tumim, according to most of the Farshim, was a piece of parchment with special names of Hashem written on them. One name of Hashem is called Urim, the other one is called Tumim. V'hayu alei v'harim v'havoi lefnei Hashem. And they shall be on the heart of Aaron as he comes before God. And Aaron will carry the judgment of the children of Israel on his heart. Lefnei Hashem, tumi before Hashem always. Now, as we know, the Urim v'Tumim was placed inside the Aaron, and whenever there was an important question that the Jewish people had, the question was put before the Kohen Gadol wearing the Urim v'Tumim. And as the Ramban says, Urim is the name of one name of Hashem, which the Kohen Gadol, the question was put to the Kohen Gadol, he would think about that name Urim, and that would cause the letters that were inscribed in the Choshen to light up. But they would light up, the letters that answered the question would be lit up, but they wouldn't be necessarily lit up in the proper order. And therefore, in order for the Kohen Gadol to decipher the letters and to know exactly what the message was, he thought about the other name of Hashem, which is referred to as Tumim, and through that he'd be able to understand exactly how to arrange the letters to receive the message that Hashem is giving to the Jewish people through the Urim v'Tumim. So, I'm going to share with you something very interesting from the Drashas Haran. We know that Aaron was older than Moshe, and we know that actually Aaron was the prophet for the Jewish people before Moshe came on the scene. And even so, when Hashem basically put Moshe on top of Aaron and made Aaron the translator for Moshe, we know, as the Torah testifies, V'racha v'samach v'libay, Hashem tells Moshe that Aaron will see and he'll rejoice. Aaron will have no pangs of envy, no pangs of jealousy against you for taking over his position, that although, again, he's older than you, and he was a prophet before you, he didn't hold any jealousy against Moshe, against the fact that Moshe became the prophet over in place of him. There was no jealousy. Because of that, the Gemara in Shabbos says that b'schar v'racha v'samach b'libay, as a reward for the fact that Aaron was rejoiced in his heart over Moshe being elevated to the prophet over him, Zaka l'choshen ha-mishpat alibay. He merited to have the choshen mishpat and his heart. because he rejoiced in his heart over Moshe coming and becoming the leader, he now merited for the choshen mishpat, for the breastplate, for the Urim B'Tumim, to rest on his heart. So the Drasha Saran asks the following question. Why do Chazal pick this aspect of the Kahuna Gedolah as the reward for not being jealous and not any other aspect? Why did Chazal choose this aspect, carrying the Chosh HaMishpat on his heart with the Urim V'Tumim inside? Why did Chazal pick that aspect of Kahuna as a reward for his rejoicing over Moshe, not being jealous over Moshe, over any other aspect of the Kahuna? And he answers with a very important principle that we find throughout Chazal, and that is that the ways of Hashem are mida keneged mida, measure for measure. According to what you've done, that is how Hashem meets out either the punishment or the reward. And the Mishnayos give different examples of mida keneged mida, measure for measure, but this is the principle that our sages lay out, and that is Hashem's ways, the way Hashem either punishes or reward, corresponds to the act that was done. The reward or the punishment will be similar to the act that is bringing them about. The Drasha Saran explains that the reason for this process, for the reason why Hashem does it this way, is because if there would be no relationship between the act and the reward, as well as the real relationship between the act and the reaction, so then you would say that, well, whatever just happened now was happenstance. You know, it just happened. But if now we know, and the way that we analyze things is measure for measure, and we see the measure for measure, so now we see that it's not just by chance that things happened. There's a pattern. There's a design. And that shows us that what's happening now is not just happening on its own, but it's Hashem orchestrating what's happening here. If the reward or the punishment corresponds, fits in, relates to the act, and this is the way that we realize this is the way things happen, then we see that there's a design and a plan in how things are happening, that they are a reaction to the action of that person, and being a reaction to the action of that person means that there's a design and that Hashem is orchestrating what's happening. That's why Hashem made things work this way, so that when we analyze it and see it this way, we see his hashgacha, we see his providence.
It's both reward and punishment.
Both reward and punishment, correct. Mm-hmm. Now, when Chazal saw that Aaron was given this aspect of the kahuna, he was given this aspect of wearing the Chosh HaMishpat on his heart, so Mida Keneged Mida has to tell us that whatever he's getting is going to be some kind of reaction to what he did. And therefore, Chazal said, what is the reward for the Ruach of the Samach Balibai? What is the reward for the fact that Aaron bore no grudge, no jealousy against Moshe in his heart for the fact that Moshe now became the prime prophet? What is the Mida Keneged Mida for that? The Mida Keneged Mida for that is the aspect of Kahuna that relates to the heart, which is wearing the Chosh HaMishpat and the Urim HaTumim over his heart. Okay? Which basically means, or we could say, that for Aaron, the measure, if we want to explain the measure for measure a little bit deeper, it's not just, you know, heart and heart. It's basically heart and mind and heart and mind. If Aaron controls his mind and his heart properly regarding the jealousy issue, then he is rewarded that he will now use his heart and mind in a special way, which is to be the one to carry the Urim V'Tumim and to deliver the messages for the Jewish people through the Urim V'Tumim. My understanding is that Rosh Hashanah comes to explain that connection he explains the connection between the two of our rejoicing in his heart over Moshe and the fact that he has the Chosh HaMishpat over his heart in the following way. And I think also he's trying to explain what actually, it's fine to say that Mida Keneged Mida, measure for measure, is what tells us that the reward for rejoicing in the heart of Moshe is wearing the Urim V'Tumim, wearing the Choshen over his heart. Was there something that forced Chazal to say that this aspect of the kahuna was a reward for that? Was there something forcing them to say that? And he explains like this. He explains that Urim V'Tumim, which again, what's the purpose of Urim V'Tumim? That when the Jewish people as a whole faced a question and they needed an answer, the question we presented to Urim V'Tumim. Now Urim V'Tumim is essentially a form of prophecy. It's a form of communicate with Hashem. When you need to know what you should now do, what is your, what should you be now, what now, and what's the next step that you have to do? And you need, the Jewish people need to know that. They have a communique with Hashem, and Hashem responds to them. So therefore, that means that Urim V'Tumim is a certain level of nevuah, of prophecy. The Mefarshim say that it's a lower level than regular prophecy, meaning when a prophet receives a prophecy, his prophecy is at a greater level than what happens by the Urim V'Tumim. My understanding of that is that a Navi has a whole experience and a whole vision. The Urim V'Tumim doesn't have that whole experience and vision. The Kohen Gadol, again, it's not a, you know, not saying it's passé, but it's basically a you know, he thinks about the name of Hashem, the letters come, he gets the message from the letters, and he delivers the message. So it's not a question of he delivers the message is there, and he delivers it. But it's not the same experience as what a Navi experiences when he receives prophecy. So it's a bit, it's considered a lower level of prophecy, but it's a prophecy. And who now is receiving that prophecy? Who is the one that delivers that prophecy? It's the Kohen Gadol. So the question is like this. You know, the job of prophecy, the job of giving over a communique from Hashem, is the job of a Navi, of a prophet. Does a prophet serve in the Beis HaMikdash? No. A prophet's job is prophecy. The Kohen Gadol's job is service in the Beis HaMikdash. Why is the Kohen Gadol getting prophecy? Why is
the
he...
The notion of getting prophecy from between the Kruvim on the...
That was only to Moshe.
Oh, just to Moshe.
That was just to Moshe.
Any Kohen Gadol could go in there?
No. I'm not aware of that.
No?
That was at least from what I know, the Pesukim, yeah. It's to Moshe.
Okay.
So what is the Kohen Gadol? Why is the Kohen Gadol becoming a prophet? That's not the job of Kahuna. The job of Kahuna is to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. The job of a Navi is to deliver prophecy. Why is the Kohen Gadol here becoming a prophet? Now you may say, says the Drash HaSaran, that, well, look, the Kohen Gadol has 8 garments. One of those garments are the Choshen. The Choshen is where the Urim V'Tumim is. It's part of the Choshen. It's part of the garments. So if it's part of the garments, and the garments is what belong to the Kohen Gadol, okay, so this comes along. You're right. Typically, prophecy doesn't belong to the Kohen. Prophecy belongs to the prophet. But if the Kohen Gadol has to wear these 8 garments, and one of those garments is the Choshen, and part of the Choshen is the Urim V'Tumim, well, then it comes along with the garments of the Kohen. Says the Drash HaSaran, that is a mistaken premise. We should not see the Urim V'Tumim as part of the priestly garments. It's not part of the priestly garments. It's inserted into one of the priestly garments, but it's not considered part of the priestly garments. And the Drash HaSaran gives the following arguments to that. The first proof again is the fact that he says is that we know from the Gemara, actually from the Gemara, yeah, that there was no Urim V'Tumim in the times of the second Beis HaMikdash. Even so, we know that during the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol wore all 8 garments, including the Choshen Mishpat. So he wore the Choshen Mishpat even without the Urim V'Tumim inside. If the Urim V'Tumim is part of the Choshen, and that was missing during the second Beis HaMikdash, then my understanding is, the Ramban is saying then, he shouldn't be wearing the Choshen Mishpat. If Urim V'Tumim is part of the Choshen Mishpat, it's part of the garment, and that garment is missing, and that part of the garment is missing, then he shouldn't be wearing the Choshen. He should be lacking one of the 8 garments. But it doesn't say that's not true. During the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol wore all 8 garments, even though there was no Urim V'Tumim. Therefore, is that the proof, says the Rosh HaSaran, and this is also mentioned by others, that if by the second Beis HaMikdash, when there was no Urim V'Tumim, the Kohen Gadol was still wearing all 8 garments, including the Choshen Mishpat, So that means Urim Bitumim is not part of the Chosha Mishpat. It's something outside of the priestly garments. So that's proof number one. Proof number two, he says, is the fact that Parshas Tetzaveh is Hashem telling Moshe what needs to be done. When we get to Parshas Pekudei, it's going to tell us that all those that were in given the job of constructing everything, it's going to tell us what they constructed, what they made. In Parshas Pekudei, there's no mention of Urim Bitumim, because it's not part of what the craftsmen who were making the priestly garments, this wasn't part of what they did. The Urim Bitumim wasn't part of that. The Urim Bitumim was not part of the priestly garments. It had nothing to do, it was not in any, the craftsmen who made the priestly garments had nothing to do with it. Who had what to do with the Urim Bitumim? Moshe. Hashem gave over to Moshe these names of Urim Bitumim, and the Rosh Hashanah says, and either Moshe wrote it, or actually, he says, or it was came down from heaven. The Urim Bitumim came down from heaven. And the point was to take the Bitumim, as the Parsha says, and put it into the Choshen HaMishpat, but not that it's part of the priestly garments. It's not part of the Big Day Kahuna.
So you're saying in the second base of Mikdash, did they still have the Choshen?
Yes.
They empty?
Yes.
So they still had eight garments?
Yes, that's the point. Oh. Just know we're in Bitumim inside.
Oh, okay.
So now we're back to the question that we had before. If the Urim Bitumim is not part of the Pigdei Kahuna, part of the Kohanim's garments, and its purpose is to deliver messages from Hashem, why is the Kohen Gadol doing that? That should be the job of a Navi. Says the Ran, that is what the Gemara in Shabbos is coming to take care of for us. What was bothering Chazal was, why is the Urim Bitumim being worn on the heart of the Kohen Gadol? Why is the Kohen Gadol the one who is delivering the messages it's prophecy that belongs to a prophet, not to a Kohen? The answer is, it was a reward for the fact that he was not jealous over the prophecy of Moshe. Even though Moshe now became the prophet instead of him, and Aaron was not jealous over the fact that Moshe now took over the prophecy from him, as a reward for that, measure for measure, he was given prophecy. He was given a level of prophecy through the Urim Bitumim over the fact that he wasn't jealous over the prophecy of Moshe. So what was bothering Chazal was, why is the Urim Bitumim part of what the Kohen Gadol wears and part of what the Kohen Gadol does? Prophecy doesn't belong to the Kohanim, it belongs to the Nevi'im. And the answer is, well, there was a reward for the Verach HaVasamach B'Libay. And the reward is going to be a measure-for-measure reward. What was that measure-for-measure reward? The Urim Bitumim. Because Moshe wasn't jealous over the prophecy of Aaron, therefore he was rewarded that, because in his heart he didn't bear jealousy over the prophecy of Moshe, he was now given prophecy as a reward to deliver to the Jewish people. So therefore the Ran is saying that the reason why Chazal understood that the reward for Barach HaVasamach B'Libay was the aspect of Urim Bitumim for the Kohen Gadol was, how do they know that? Measure for measure. They know through measure for measure tells them that the reason that he received the Urim Bitumim, that part of being the Kohen Gadol, Urim Bitumim, he received it for rejoicing over his heart. The measure for measure of rejoicing in his heart, not being jealous, and Urim Bitumim, is because he was not jealous over Moshe becoming the prophet, he was now rewarded with becoming the prophet, with having a certain level of prophecy himself. Okay. Now, the next thing about the Urim Bitumim comes from the Abavanel. And the Abavanel deals with the following questions. Again, as I mentioned before, Urim Bitumim is a level of prophecy, but assumed to be a lower level than regular prophecy that a prophet experiences. If so, the Abavanel brings three questions. Question number one, Yehoshua, the disciple and the successor of Moshe, was a Navi, as depicted in Sefer Yehoshua, and from the fact that we see that he performed that great miracle of stopping the sun from setting. Yeshua is a Navi. At the same time, when Hashem tells Moshe to appoint Yehoshua, Hashem says regarding Yeshua, "V'lefnei Elazar HaKoyen Yamid," he will stand before Elazar, who is the son of Aaron, the new Kohen Gadol. "V'sha'alai b'mishpat ha'urim," and shall ask him for the judgment of the Urim. So Hashem is telling Moshe, Yeshua is going to be asking his questions from Elazar the Kohen Gadol, from the Urim Batumim. So the question is, if Yeshua is a prophet, and prophecy, regular prophecy that comes to a prophet, is greater, is at a higher level than the Urim Batumim, then why is Yeshua asking from the Urim Batumim? Yeshua should be able to get his answers through prophecy. After all, he's a prophet. He's on a higher level than the prophecy that he receives is a higher level than the prophecy that comes through the Urim Batumim. So then what's he asking the Urim Batumim for? He should be able through his own prophecy to get the answers. That's question number one. Question number two comes from a Gemara in Yuma, Tefayin Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara says like this: we know that the prophecy of a prophet can be rescinded. Rashi says, where do we see that from? From the book of Yonah. Yonah came and he made a prophecy, Nineveh will be overturned, but because they did tshuva, because they repented, therefore the prophecy was rescinded. And this is the rule: a prophecy, a negative prophecy, a prophecy that's foretelling tragedy, can be rescinded again through tshuva, through mercy of Hashem. So the Gemara says that even though the decree of a prophet can go back and be rescinded, as we find by Yonah, however, that which is decreed through the Urim Batumim cannot go back. As the Pasuk says, the Pasuk calls it, and this is the Pasuk that we mentioned before by Yeshua, "B'mishpat ha'urim," by the judgment of the Urim. So the Gemara says, just like a judgment is not rescinded, so too the decisions that come through the Urim Batumim are also not rescinded. So the question is, if Nevuah is a higher level, is higher, typical Nevuah, the prophecy of a prophet, is on a greater level than the prophecy that comes from Urim Batumim, so how do we say that the prophecy of a prophet can be rescinded, but Urim Batumim not? That's question number two. Question number three is, what was one of the aspects of Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness over other prophets was the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu could always have Nevuah whenever he wanted. If Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to speak to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, he just went and did it. He was always in a state of prophecy. Other prophets, on the other hand, if they want to experience prophecy, they have to condition themselves. There's a whole process that they have to go through to condition themselves, to make themselves basically fit to be able to receive the prophecy. They don't just wake up, decide they have a question and they talk to Hashem. They go through a whole process of conditioning themselves to be able to receive prophecy. So Moshe was unique. He didn't need that. That was his level of prophecy. The question is, Urim Batumim seemingly was on the same level as Moshe. If there was a question, the leader went before the Urim Batumim, asked the question, and the question came about. It doesn't say anywhere that the Kohen Gadol had to prepare himself. The question was asked. As the Ramban says, the Kohen Gadol had the thoughts that he needed to have in thinking about the names of Hashem, and it worked. So how do we understand that this unique level of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy of always being able to receive prophecy whenever he wanted to, it's very strange that that same level is in the lower level of prophecy of Urim Batumim that regular Nevi'im who are on a higher level can't have? Those are the three questions that the Abravanel brings down. So the Abravanel answers basically with one principle. And that is, do you know why Yehoshua had to ask the Urim Batumim any questions that he had? Says the Abravanel, he didn't always really have to. But let's say there was a question at hand. The Jewish people were in a dilemma. They had a question. The question needed to be answered right now. And Yeshua was not in the state of prophecy. He wasn't ready for it. He wasn't prepared. He didn't have a chance to prepare himself, get himself in the state of prophecy to be able to answer the question. So what do they have to do? Wait for Yeshua to get himself into the state of prophecy to get the answer? The answer is that Hashem did the Jewish people a favor and gave them the Urim Batumim. So that when there was a need for an immediate answer, they could get it. So it's not a question of Urim B'Tumim being a greater level of prophecy, a greater experience of prophecy or not. It's nothing to do with it. Urim B'Tumim was the means by which, if the Jewish people needed an answer, it was a time of need, they needed an answer right then and there. How did they get it? They couldn't do it through a prophet because it would take time for the prophet to condition himself. I needed the answer now. How did the answer come right now? It came through the Urim B'Tumim. That is why the level of the Urim B'Tumim is like Moshe, that it's immediate. Because again, it's there for being able to answer the questions of the Jewish people in the here and now. They need it right now. They have a situation right now. They need an answer right now. It's not, again, it's not about a higher level, a greater level, a lower level. This is a tool for an immediate answer for the Jewish people. And this also will help us answer what the Gemara in Yuma means when it says what the Urim B'Tumim, a decision from the Urim B'Tumim, can't be rescinded. Says Abar Benel, if the point of the Urim B'Tumim is to give the Jewish people an answer that they need right now, if that answer could be rescinded, then it's not a very good thing to work off of. If you need an answer right now, but there's a doubt as to whether this answer is really dependable, then it's not really serving its purpose. If right now they have a dilemma, right now they need an answer, so right now they have to get the answer. And if there's any kind of doubt as to whether the answer is going to be dependable or not, then it's not a good answer. So therefore, again, because of what the Urim B'Tumim served, which was for an immediate answer for a pressing need of the Jewish people, it had to be something that couldn't be rescinded, because if there's any level of doubt in its viability, then it's not a good answer. So therefore, says Abar Benel, yes, Urim B'Tumim is a lower level of prophecy than the prophecy that a prophet experiences. But because of the nature of what Urim B'Tumim was about, and that was to give an answer to a pressing need for the Jewish people right then and there, therefore it has to have certain attributes over regular prophecy for it to serve its purpose. And in order for it to serve its purpose of answering the questions that were pressing, it has to be able to give the answer right away, and it has to be an answer that would not be taken back. Okay. Now we'll go back. Go back to the towards the beginning of the parasha.
You had another question, which was why is it that answered the question why they wouldn't go to the Urim B'Tumim, but why was the Kohen Gadol the one who had this?
That was we said before.
In order to have this,
The Kohen Gadol got it because, like we said, it was a reward for Aaron, for Al Chavasamach Belibay. That's why he was given Urim B'Tumim. That's one thing.
So he had the ability to make an immediate nevuah
through the
preparation.
Through the Urim B'Tumim. Through the Urim B'Tumim.
Yeah.
Only through the Urim B'Tumim, only at the level of Urim B'Tumim.
Okay.
Let's go back now to page 464, back to the beginning of the parasha. Perek Chav Ches, Pasuk Aleph. Okay. The Ata and you, Hakrev Eilechas Aaron Achicha Vespan of Itai, bring forth to you Aaron your brother and his sons with him, Mitoich B'nei Yisrael from amongst the Jewish people, Lachahanoi Li, to be the coming to serve me, Aaron Nadav Aviu Elazar Yisrael B'nei Aaron. Aaron and his four sons, Nadav Aviu Elazar and Yisrael. You shall make garments, holy garments, for Aaron your brother, for glory and for splendor. So here is where Hashem is telling Moshe that he is now to separate and take Aaron and his family to be the Kohanim, the ones that will do the service in the Beis HaMikdash. So again, the Abar Benel addresses a very interesting question. The question that he addresses is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose one family to serve in the Beis HaMikdash and anyone outside that family is not allowed to? Why did Hashem create the situation of the service of the Beis HaMikdash basically to be exclusive to one family? You know, it's interesting that when the original plan was for the Bechorim to be the firstborn, right? The firstborn would be the Kohanim, and actually be the firstborn of any tribe of the Jewish people, okay? And maybe even then the question would have been, but again, why make it exclusive to only one group of people? Why isn't it open to everyone? Why shouldn't everyone, why not give everyone a chance of doing their service in the Beis HaMikdash? So he brings two very interesting reasons. The first reason is, the Kohanim, meaning whoever it is, those who are serving, is going to do this, are going to be dedicated to doing their service in the Beis HaMikdash, he says they should attain wisdom and know Das Elyon, which I understand that to mean a very high level of wisdom, a very high level of intellect. Das Elyon, the intellect of the above, a godly wisdom, a very high level of connection to Hashem, Das Elyon, the intellect of the above, the godly wisdom. They get a very high level of wisdom. Now, the Abba Ben El says there are many obstacles to attaining this godly wisdom, namely the quest of taking care of yourself and your family. When a person has to basically deal with his own livelihood and taking care of his needs and his family needs, the involvement in that doesn't allow you to seclude yourself and reach these heights of wisdom. You know, if you want to be able to reach these heights of wisdom, you need to be undisturbed and totally focused on it. And that can happen if you also basically have on your head the responsibility of taking care of your needs and your family needs. Therefore, Hashem commanded to designate one family that their entire endeavor would be to attain these godly concepts, these high spiritual concepts, without the disturbance of having to make a livelihood. And this is something, so that's the point. The Kohanim, whoever's going to be the Kohanim, have to be people that are going to be totally dedicated to attaining Das Elyon, to attaining a very high level of wisdom. In order to do that, they have to be undisturbed. They have to be able to basically seclude themselves away from worldly matters, and not have to deal with making a livelihood. That's something that you can't expect that from everyone. Right? You can't expect that from everyone. If you want everyone to have the chance to serve as a Kohen, they have to be able to reach this level of high wisdom. And that necessitates to basically separate yourself from worldly matters and to focus on all these things. This is not something that you can expect from everyone. Therefore, Hashem chose a family that was most suited or most inclined to reach these high levels of spirituality. And whose family was that? The family of Aaron. And the family of Aaron would now receive the Matnes Kehuna, all the gifts the Kohen gives. For what purpose? To be sustained. If they're going to be able to be the Kohanim and dedicate themselves to reaching all these high spiritual, this high level of spiritual wisdom, and they have to be undisturbed from that, then someone's got to take care of them. Someone's got to take care of their livelihood. The answer is, that's what the Matnes Kehuna are about. All the gifts that we give to the Kohen are about that. So that this Kohen can be the Kohen for us in the Beis HaMikdash, we now have to do what they would have to be doing for themselves, which is supporting them. So therefore, there has to be that one family or that one group, because perhaps when the question was the Bechorim being the Kohanim, again, it was one specific group. And the Bechorim, because they were the firstborn, potentially, again, could have been well-suited and inclined for those high spiritual levels. They lost it because of the Chet HaEgel. But whoever's going to get that job has to be someone that, again, because they're serving in the Beis HaMikdash, have to reach very high levels of godly wisdom and spiritual wisdom. To do that, they need to be undisturbed from pursuing that wisdom, word, being involved in worldly matters and livelihood would take you away from that. And therefore Hashem designated a family most inclined to reach those levels, which is Aaron and his sons, and he gave us and he gave us the responsibility of supporting them so they should be able to reach those levels. And to be able to, and the original question was, well, why not give everyone a chance to serve in the Beis HaMikdash? The answer is everyone everyone can't be expected to reach those high levels of wisdom without being involved in worldly matters. That can't be everyone. Okay? Doesn't exactly explain why it can't be everyone. I guess he means to say that not everyone's suited for that. Right? Or the question is though, why would you only need one, like why make it so exclusive? You know, you could say, you know, well half the people are doing this, half the people are doing that. I think the answer is because the expectations of the levels that need to be reached cannot be expected from everyone. It was actually given to those most inclined and suited for it, which was Aaron and his children. Now we also know that Hashem chose Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, right? Hashem chose the tribe of Levi for a certain level of service in the Beis HaMikdash, and from within Levi, he chose the Kohanim. The Bible now says it follows the same pattern. We know that Shevet Levi, as an entire tribe, were the most inclined and suited for high spiritual levels, and we see this from the fact that who were the ones in Mitzrayim who learned Torah, who taught Torah, who were not enslaved? Shevet Levi. They were the ones. They were always the ones that were involved more in ruchnius and spiritual matters than the rest of the tribes. So therefore, when Hashem had to single out a tribe for service in the Mishkan, it was the tribe most inclined to attaining high levels of ruchnius and spiritual heights. That's Levi. And then from amongst Levi, he chose the ones most inclined from amongst Shevet Levi for reaching high spiritual levels, and those were the Kohanim. So therefore, the question was, why only one family exclusively being given the service in the Beis HaMikdash? The answer is because in order to be the Kohanim, they have to be able to reach high levels of Chachma, high levels of wisdom, Das Elyon. To do that, they have to be totally devoted and undisturbed from worldly matters. That could only be the exclusive, that's only possible or fitting for an exclusive group of people. You can't expect that from everyone. And therefore, the ones chosen for that was the family from amongst the tribe that were most inclined and suited for attaining spiritual heights, the tribe of Levi and the family of Aaron. That's answer number one to why the avod is exclusive to one family. The other answer, says the Barbanel, is everything corresponds to the achdus of Hashem. Everything corresponds to the absolute oneness of Hashem. Hashem is the absolute one, Hashem Echad. And therefore, Hashem has Goy Echad, one unique nation, one Torah, one Beis HaMikdash, and one group that does the service in the Beis HaMikdash. It all is meant to correspond and follow the pattern of Hashem's oneness. One goes with one. Hashem is absolute one. He has one nation. He has one Torah. He has one Beis HaMikdash, and one family does the service in the Beis HaMikdash. It all is meant to correspond to the oneness of Hashem. That's his second answer. The last thing for tonight I want to share with you is on the words in Pasuk Beis where it says, "V'asisa b'gdei kodesh Aaron achicha, you shall make garments of holiness for Aaron your brother, v'chavod l'sifaris, for glory and for splendor." Okay? For glory and the splendor of whom? So, the Rebbeinu B'chaya has two explanations. One explanation, the Ramban says this too, is the chavod and the faris, the honor and the splendor of Aaron. The big day kodesh are to bring honor and splendor to Aaron. The Rebbeinu B'chaya explains that the Kohen Gadol was recognized as a very important, he calls him a Malach Hashem Tzvakas, The Kohen Gadol was recognized like an angel of God through his service in the Mishkan by Yechidim, he says, by individuals. Those around the Beis HaMikdash who saw the Kohen Gadol do the Avodah, do the service, and they saw how he did the service, and they saw what kind of great human, what a great individual he was, they recognized him for he was. They recognized him as an angel of God. Those who experienced and knew the Kohen Gadol from his service recognized his greatness. They recognized him like an angel of God. But that wouldn't necessarily bring him honor in the eyes of the populace who don't necessarily see his service. And therefore, the way to bring him honor and glory in the eyes of the populace, in the eyes of the people, was basically dressing him royally. He had to look like a prince, like a king. And through that, the populace would now recognize his greatness. The populace doesn't, this is how I understand them, the Hamayin he calls them, the Hamayin doesn't necessarily appreciate the Kohen Gadol through his service. They don't see it. So for them, they need something has, there has to be something about the Kohen Gadol that when they see him, they'll understand his greatness, they'll appreciate and respect his greatness. How? By how he's how they see him, how he's presented, how he's dressed. And the Rebbeinu Bechaya points out how we find the different garments, we actually find them by royalty. For instance, one of the garments is the ksonis. It's like a type of a jacket. Okay. Yosef received a ksonis pasim. That was to elevate Yosef. Okay. The Kohen Gadol's turban or hat was called a mitznefes. Says the Brain of Achaya that, you know, rulers of Arab lands, what do they wear? They have something, they said, wrapped around their head and neck. I don't know if the mitznefes, from my understanding, was not around the neck, but the point is that the way the Kohen Gadol was dressed was how rulers of those times dressed. Because it was about presenting them as royalty, says Rebbeinu Bechaya, so that the people, the common people, the people who didn't experience and know him through his service in the Beis HaMikdash, through his worship in the Beis HaMikdash, so that they should have respect for him. The second explanation is you shall make garments for Aaron your brother for honor and splendor of whom? Says Rebbeinu Bechaya, L'chveid Hashem HaShoichem B'Seichem, for the honor of God who dwells in their midst, Ulatif Eres Yisrael, for the splendor of the Jewish people. Aaron's Bignei Kehuna, Aaron's clothing, were there to bring honor to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and splendor to the Jewish people. Thank you.